Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939.
Always and always the glory, the glory and wonder of you.
The makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment, brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. With Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Melissa Corges, Douglas MacPhail, Meredith Wilson, and tonight's special guests, the Hardy family, Mickey Rooney, Lewis Stone, Faye Holden, Cecilia Parker, Ann Rutherford, and John King. And here is your host for this evening, His Honor the Mayor of Tarzana, California, Robert Young.
Thank you, Warren, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And here is some really good news to us. Yesterday, the Woman's Radio Committee, for the second consecutive year, selected the Good News program as the number one variety show on the air. We appreciate this tribute, and every member of our company, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee and MGM, join me in expressing our thanks. And we pledge to do our best to try to be worthy of this great honor. We have a very full program tonight with a preview of the new Hardy picture, The Hardys Ride High. So I think we'd better get right down to business. Meredith Wilson starts us off with a hit tune from the new Jeanette MacDonald picture, Broadway Serenade, High Flyin'. Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. Well, today is Snook's birthday. As the scene opens, Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is taking her to a toy shop to buy her a little present. Listen.
Hello, Snooks. We'll be at the toy store in just a minute. Have you made up your mind what you want?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want?
The whole store.
Oh, don't be silly. You can't have the whole store.
Why?
Because I'm not that rich.
Is your poor daddy?
No, I'm just, as you might say, half and half.
Then buy me half the store.
Now look, Snook, let's have it understood before we go in. I don't want you going around saying, I want this, and I want that, and I want the other thing.
Well, I get it.
Get what?
A whole store.
Oh, stop that. I told you I won't buy you the whole store.
Why?
Because I can't afford it. And I positively refuse to spend a lot of money on useless things. What are you crying about?
You do it for Mommy.
Never mind that. Now, I'll buy you one or two toys, but I don't want you to get things that'll annoy me. No mechanical toys that I have to keep winding.
Will you buy me a drum?
If I do, you'll keep disturbing me when I'm working.
No, Daddy. I'll only drum when you're asleep.
Forget the drum. Now, get a useful toy, like a little electric stove. You might learn how to cook.
Is that useful, Daddy?
Why, of course. Everybody should know how to cook.
Why?
Oh, come on. Here's the toy shop. Let's go in. And remember, Snooks, a little electric stove and that's all.
All right, Daddy.
Here's the sales lady. Now, just behave, Snooks.
Yes, sir? Oh, hello, little girl. What can I do for you?
Daddy wants an electric stove.
Well, don't you want it?
No, I want a drum.
Now, listen, Snooks. We agreed on a stove, and that's what you're going to get. Miss, will you please show her a stove?
Yes, we have a full line of cooking toys right over here. Now, what kind of a stove would you like, little girl?
A stove with a drum on top.
Snooks!
Say, here's a little beauty. If you put the plug in the socket, it actually works.
Oh. I like it.
You really like it?
Uh-huh.
Shall I pack it up?
No.
Why not?
It ain't got a drum.
No, there's no such thing as a stove with a drum. You can have a stove without a drum.
Can I have a drum without a stove?
No.
Why?
Because you can. I told you I want you to get something useful. Now, pick out a stove.
I can't cook, Daddy.
Well, look, I'll be glad to play with a little stove and teach you how to cook.
Is you going to play with it?
Well, just to teach you.
You did that with my washing machine and you broke it.
I didn't break it. Grandpa did.
You were both playing with it all day.
We were not. And Snooks, you know very well, when your washing machine broke, I bought you a bicycle to make up for it.
I could never get on it.
Well, why not?
Because you was riding it all the time.
Oh, nonsense. It was altogether too small for me to ride on.
That's why it busted.
Oh, never mind all this. Pick out the stove you want. Let's go home.
All right, Daddy.
Oh, here. Look at this. All chromium fitted. And the pots and pans go with it.
Oh. I like it.
Oh, fine. Is it big enough?
Uh-huh.
Shall we take it with us?
No.
Why not?
I ain't got a drum.
All right, that's enough. Miss, pack up that little stove for the child. Oh, no, please. Now, be sensible. Here, I'll buy you some more toys if you'll behave. Oh, miss, pack in that chemical set and that toy dynamo and erector and that carpenter's toolbox. Is there anything else you'd like, sir?
Uh-huh.
Well, what is it?
Something I can play with.
Ladies and gentlemen, Baby Snooks and Daddy will return later in the program, and Snooks will get her first cooking lesson, so stand by. Now a song from Douglas MacPhail. It's a brand new number, and Meredith Wilson predicts it's going to be a hit. What do you think, Doug?
Oh, it's a swell tune, Bob.
All right, let's have it. The title, My Heart Ran Away With My Head.
Away with my heart. like the daylight. What makes the blue of the sea blue when I'm looking at you? Why are the stars nearer? Why are the skies clearer? What makes the song of the birds newer when I'm looking at you? Things that we didn't say trembled in the air. Love like a tidal wave had swept me unaware. I kissed her lips and I was torn apart. My heart ran away with my head. My loneliness suddenly fled. I knew that we never would part. My heart ran away with my head. And you ran away with my heart.
Warren, I certainly wished I had you with me the other night at a certain party.
Well, why, Bob?
Well, this was a dinner party given by a very charming hostess who usually sees to it that everything is absolutely perfect for her guests. The dinner was delicious, course after course. And just as we were looking forward to a grand cup of coffee to finish it off, we received quite a shock. The coffee was flat. It just seemed to have no taste at all.
Well, did anyone say anything?
Well, not then, of course, but after the crowd left, well, a good deal was said. It seems this woman has the idea that all coffee is practically the same.
Well, Bob, I don't think anyone who's tried Maxwell House lately has that idea. You know, friend, from the day when Joel Cheek created it more than 50 years ago, Maxwell House has been famous for a wonderfully distinctive flavor all its own. Millions of people have rated it just about perfect. But today, Maxwell House is truly better than ever, the result of two wonderful new improvements. First, a way has been found to enrich this famous coffee blend so marvelously that now you get extra goodness, extra body and flavor that you may never have known in coffee before. Second, there's the amazing new radiant roast process, which roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through. It brings out all the true natural flavor of this enriched new blend. With radiant roast, there's no chance of weak coffee due to under-roasting or bitter coffee due to parching. That's why today we believe the new Maxwell House is really just about the tops in coffee flavor. Why don't you try it? Get a pound tomorrow. With your very first delicious cup, we know you will say this new Maxwell House is more than ever the coffee that's good to the last drop.
Tonight we welcome back to our program the brilliant singing star of the Great Waltz, Miss Melissa Corgis. It's nice to see you again, Melissa. You're looking very beautiful.
Thank you, Hugo.
As her first number this evening, Miss Corgis has chosen the beautiful Liebesfreud by Fritz Kreisler. Melissa.
That was wonderful, Melissa.
Thank you, Frank.
Now, you just run home and practice your scales for half an hour in the morning and then come over to my house and we'll start in on Traviata.
All right. Shall I bring Lucia with me?
Oh, no, I think it'll be nicer if you just come alone. Oh, you mean the opera? No, well, that won't be necessary. We'll...
Very well. Mm. Farewell, my handsome songbird.
Oh, I can't help it. She's charming. Well, I think I'll be
right. Wait a minute, Birdseed. Are we to understand that you're telling Melissa Corgis how to sing?
Well, it's none of your business, my dear fellow, but why shouldn't she have the benefit of my 20 years in the opera?
Opera, now. Frank, I don't believe you can sing a note.
Sing a note? I was the only singer in history that could sing every note in the vocal range. Do you know any male singers that can hit high E above middle C?
No.
Well, I...
Wait a minute. Largamento did it.
Oh, he did. Well, did you ever know a fellow who could sing high F above middle C?
No.
Well,
just a minute. Pizzicato hit a high F.
brought pizzicato into it. Well, Meredith, what's the highest note ever hit by a male voice?
At the Copenhagen Exposition in 1916, Portamento reached an F sharp.
That's it, just as I thought. I do hold the record.
What record?
In 1922, I hit a high H and held it. I'll never forget the applause of the crowd.
Now, wait a minute, you daffy crackpot.
What?
The diatonic scale only goes to G.
The diatonic scale. Oh, yeah. Well, I studied under famous Lucatelli, and he told me I could go to H.
Oh, Frank. You're incorrigible. Can't you ever tell the truth?
Why, Bob, you know the motto on the Morgan crest, in vino veritas. I mean, super omnia veritas. Above all, truth.
Truth. Yes. Someday I'll nail you, Frank.
Yes.
Someday when you least expect it, I'll put a spoonful of the truth drug in your coffee.
Truth drug? Gee, this is interesting.
What are you talking about, Jan?
Well, there's a certain drug, one injection of it, and you can't help telling the truth. It's called scopolamine, but I don't suppose you ever heard of it.
Scopolamine. Yes, oh, one of the midriatic alkaloids, much the same as hyoscine, derived from the solanaceous plant.
Well, cut off my legs and call me Shorty.
Well, that makes me the unluckiest guy in the world. Frank, where did you hear of scopolamine?
My boy, would you ask Alexander Graham Bell where he ever heard of the telephone?
Frank, don't tell me you invented the truth drug.
Not exactly, but I was on the verge of discovering it when it was announced by other investigators. Ah, those happy days in my laboratory. Sitting on the floor with my fluoroscope, tinkering with my test tubes, and meddling with the molecules.
Gee, this is interesting. You know, Frank, when I was in high school, I studied chemistry, and I was president of the chem club.
Oh, you were. You would.
Yes, at that time, it was my ambition to become a soda jerker.
Well, don't give up, Meredith, just because you seem to be sidetracked. It took me years to achieve...
No, just a minute. You're standing here with a handful of test tubes.
Yes?
Only 5 minutes ago, you were a singer.
Bob, the president has his stamp collection. Einstein has his violin. Surely a chemist can have a hobby, too.
Chemist?
H2O Morgan, sir. The last of a long line of experimenters.
And you were the last experiment.
Exactly.
Yes.
Is there a hidden meaning in that remark?
Now, leave him alone, Bob. I want to hear about your laboratory work, Frank.
Yes, well, when I was in college, my principal interest was in segregating the gases of the atmosphere. For 2 long years, I thought gas, I slept gas, I ate gas. I was full of my subject.
You were full of your subject?
Yes,
When did you develop the slow leak?
I'm not going to waste any more time talking to an illiterate like you. I'll take my...
Oh, don't go, Frank. Don't go. I want to hear it.
Meredith, you're a lovely fellow, and at the same time, not entirely revolting. You really want me to tell my story?
Pray do, Frank. Pray do.
Well, very well. After 5 years, I had mastered every branch of chemistry, including the drip grind process. And I graduated with high honors in goldfish swallowing. Does that sound sensible to you?
No, but why change now?
Oh. Well, Meredith, after I graduated, I was awarded a traveling fellowship by one of the great philanthropic societies. Did you ever hear of Anthony P. Girdle Foundation? The Anthony P. Girdle Foundation?
Of course it's...
Good! This is certainly getting to be an uplifting conversation. My first assignment for the foundation was to seek a mysterious, rare drug in the wilds of South America.
Chile?
No, I went in the summer. After 5 years in the laboratory, naturally, I wanted a change of atmosphere, so I shipped on a cattle boat, the SS Aroma.
Very distinctive.
Yes, I carried with me a complete portable drugstore, including a telephone booth and a pinball game. I was prepared for any emergency, and when we arrived at Colombo, I immediately set out for the interior.
Were you on foot, Frank?
No, I was riding a very intelligent pack mule named El Pomona. But we had not gone 200 miles when misfortune overtook us.
You were eaten by cannibals.
No, what happened was that El Pomona stumbled over a liana. I stumbled over it, too. Rolled down a mountain with the drugstore on his back and fractured his clavicle. I was horrified as I'd become very attached to El Pomona, and I determined to try an emergency operation to save him.
Good thing you had the drugstore with you.
Yes, imagine the drama of the situation. There, under the baking tropical sun... Just a man and his mule. I sterilized a couple of scalpels, gave El Pomona the ether, and set to work. I made a median sacral incision at once. I must curtail his lumbar extensor.
What's that?
Shorten the back.
Shall I let out the weight?
No, just leave it snug. What are we talking about?
Hurry up, Frank, before the mule comes out of the ether.
I was making the sutures when I looked up. I can't get out of that one. To find myself surrounded by an extraordinary group of natives.
Oh, this is the part I love.
Even the ignorant savages could see that El Pomona was in desperate straits. And suddenly one of them, apparently the head man, stepped forward, holding out to me a gourd containing a milky fluid. At the same time, he gestured excitedly toward the mule.
What was in the gourd, Frank?
I gathered it was some native medicine, and since El Pomona's condition was very critical, I determined to try it. I forced the liquid down the animal's throat. He shuddered once, rose to his feet, and bounded off across the pampas, drugstore and all.
Goodness, Frank, what was in that bottle?
Gentlemen, you won't believe this, but it was the drug I had come to South America to find. Rhodiantalis Detour.
Eureka! Did you bring any back with you, Frank?
Never fear. After some negotiation, I traded the pinball game for a gallon of the precious fluid and immediately returned to New York. Imagine my happiness when I discovered on my arrival that Anthony P. Girdle himself had broken his leg.
Gosh, you got a chance to try it on the board.
Exactly. I hurried to his home, and there was A.P., unable to stand up without a pair of crutches. I gave him a dose of the medicine and told him to throw away his crutches instantly. He did.
Was he cured?
No, he fell down and broke his other leg. I guess it only worked on mules. Well, so long, Bob.
Hey, Bob. Bob, look at the clock. It says 25 minutes.
Oh, no, it doesn't, Warren. That's where you're wrong. Shows you don't understand clock language. What that clock is saying is, hey, you actors, it's coffee time at Maxwell House again. Can't you smell that wonderful fragrance? Why don't you take time out for a moment and have a delicious cup of coffee?
Well, Bob, when it's Maxwell House that's being served, I guess even an actor would be glad to stop and have a cup.
And friends, once again, we invite you all over the country, to join us in this famous old Thursday evening custom. A moment's relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee. Pull up your chairs, folks, and have your coffee with us. Everybody served? Now, here's sugar and cream. And Meredith, let's have music. We pause briefly for station identification.
This is KFI, Los Angeles.
This is Bob Young again, and we continue our Good News Maxwell House program with the Hardy family, Melissa Gorgeous, Baby Snooks, and the rest of the Good News gang. And now the MGM Theater of the Air takes special pleasure in presenting a glimpse of the latest adventures of Judge Hardy's family. The newest picture, The Hardys Ride High, the screenplay of which was written by Agnes Christine Johnson, William Ludwig, and Kay Van Riper from an original story by Carrie Wilson. In the private chambers of Judge Hardy's court, the judge is busy with a pile of legal papers on his desk when the bailiff enters with a strange gentleman.
Gentleman to see you, Judge. Good afternoon, Judge Hardy. My card.
Jonas Brownell, attorney at law, Detroit, Michigan. Well, I'm glad to know you, Mr. Brownell. What can I do for you?
Judge, are you the great-great-grandson of Colonel James Standish Leeds, a well-known figure of the War of 1812?
Yeah, so they've been telling me for a good many years. Why?
Well, if you can prove it legally, you're the heir to something more than $2 million.
$2 million? Well, that's a lot. $2 million? Are you crazy?
Well, I didn't come all the way from Detroit to establish my insanity.
Did you or did you not say $2 million?
$2 million.
Yeah, that's what I thought you said. But, Mr. Brownell, whoever's leaving me this fortune?
Why, a retired capitalist of Detroit, James S. Leeds, III.
Didn't he have any children?
No, none of his own. True, there's an adopted son, Philip. But since Mr. Leeds left no will, you merely have to prove that you're a blood relative to have first claim on the estate.
Well, that sounds kind of hard on this young Philip.
Oh, the old man set up a trust fund for the boy. Just between us, I think he might have willed him the estate if Philip hadn't been, shall we say, too much involved with the wrong kind of people.
Wrong kind of people?
Notably, a certain rather notorious chorus girl by the name of Consuela McNish. Young lady who'd set fire to an orphan asylum for 50 cents and give you a quarter change.
Oh, Judge, I just got a phone call from the football field. We're taking a beating. It's the last quarter, and the score is Olympia 6, Carvel High nothing. Oh, excuse me, Judge, I forgot you had a visitor.
You know, it's a funny world, Mr. Brownell. I doubt it to my son, Andrew, whose allowance is $1.50 a week, even $2 million. Make up for losing his first game of high school football.
All unaware of his father's astounding good fortune, Andy Hardy comes tearing down a resident street of Carvel and up the steps of Polly Benedict's house.
Yahoo! Whoopee! Hey, Polly!
Oh, hello, Andy.
Polly, we made a touchdown in the last 3 minutes of play.
Well, that's wonderful, Andy.
Oh, why didn't you come to the game like you promised?
Well, I'm sorry, but I had an unexpected guest. You know, that boy I met last vacation. The one from the Boston school. Dick Bannersley.
Huh?
Come in. I want you to meet him. This is Mr. Hardy. Mr. Bannersley.
Very happy to meet you, I'm sure, Mr. Hardy.
Huh? Oh. Yeah. Happy to meet you, too. Well, why don't you sit down, Mr. Bannersley, or are you leaving right away?
Well, it seems to me that I've heard it said that gentlemen remain standing until a lady is seated.
Oh, I'm sorry, Polly, I forgot. Besides, I can't ever think of you as being a lady. I mean, excuse me, you know what I mean.
Well, I don't mind saying I'm Spanish.
Me neither.
Me neither.
A glass of lemonade, please? Here's yours, Andy. Oh, here's some cookies.
Oh, boy, homemade raisin cookies. I'll take three, just to start with.
Mind if I smoke, Polly?
No, of course not.
Have a cigarette, Hardy?
Nope.
Don't smoke, eh?
Me? Oh, sure I do.
You don't either, Andy.
Well, that's all you know. I'm very particular about the brand I smoke.
Some more lemonade, Dick?
Oh, no, but I could improve this with a shot of gin.
Gin? Oh, I'm afraid we haven't any in the house.
Say, haven't you ever seen those pictures in the physiology books that shows what that gin and whiskey does to the lining of your stomach?
Oh, why, you don't take that bosh seriously, do you, old man?
Me? Sure, I'm in training for football. Say, I haven't told you, Polly. You should have seen our touchdown. 47 yards and 8 plays. We zigged.
That's swell, Andy. Do you play football, Dick?
No, my governor won't let me. According to him, all I'm going to school for is to get poised.
Well, poise will be poised.
Yes.
Well, don't you see, Dick? Poise will be poised. Boys will be boys.
No, it just doesn't make me laugh, but definitely.
Better try again, Andy. You know, puns are the lowest form of wit.
Yeah, well, I can think of things a lot lower. Well, I gotta go, Polly. Can I see you outside for alone a minute?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Excuse me.
So long, Bud.
Nice to have met you, Hardy.
But definitely. Polly, remember what you promised me if we won the game?
Oh, I did promise you a kiss, didn't I? Oh, well. All right. Go ahead.
Say, what goes on here? You act as if I never kissed you before. Come here.
Oh, you hide. You always be so crude.
Say, I don't get it.
Oh, can't you be a little more subtle? Can't you approach a girl with a little more finesse?
Finesse? You mean like fancy pants in there does, huh? well, not me. I'm a guy that goes direct for action. Now, come here and give me that kiss.
Stop it.
Oh. I begin to get the idea. I'm all right until some la-di-da Lizzie like Dick Bannersley comes along.
Well, that's not it at all. But I should think that you'd rather model yourself on a man of the world instead of a hoodlum.
Oh, a hoodlum, huh? Then why don't you try going steady with fancy pants instead of hoodlums?
Well, I certainly might prefer anybody to someone who goes around grabbing girls and kissing them.
Andrew Hardy.
Yes, Miss Benedict?
Your father just told me from the courthouse. He wants you to go home at once.
Yes, Miss Benedict.
Then good afternoon, Mr. Hardy.
A man of the world, huh? Oh, how can a guy be a man of the world in a buck and a half a week?
The door of the Hardy home is burst open by the usually calm Judge Hardy in a high state of dither, almost hysterical in his anxiety to tell Mrs. Hardy, daughter Marion, and Andy about the $2 million.
Mother, whoop, Marion, Andy.
Mom, look at Dad.
Father.
James, what's the matter? I couldn't understand a word you said over the phone.
Look at me, Emily. Do I look different?
Well, there's some dust on your coat sleeve and your hair's much.
No, don't mean that. I mean, can't you see that I'm a different man?
Oh, James, come on in the den and lie down. You'll feel better in a minute.
Emily, you're seeing me a man who has miraculously watched his dreams come true. The most amazing, Andy. How'd you like to go to an exclusive Eastern boys' school?
Not me. I hate rich kids.
James Hardy, what is the matter? You're talking foolish.
And you'd talk foolish, too, if the moon slid down right out of the sky and landed smack in your lap. Marion, how'd you like to have an ermine coat?
An ermine coat? Mother, he is sick. Oh, now, James, please, dear, sit down. Oh, James, you're delirious. You're feverish.
Yes, I'm delirious. I'm feverish.
Oh, now, dearest, please don't take on so. We all love you. We'll take care of you.
Ah, Mother, now you sit down. Now, Marion, Andy, you brace yourselves. I've just learned that I am the sole heir to $2 million.
$2 million? Pop's gone haywire. Let's get Doc Jones.
Humor him, Mother. Don't argue with him.
Now, wait a minute, everybody. Wait a minute. I'm in full possession of my senses. It's true. Now I must go to Detroit to support my claim, and if I do it successfully, they'll give us the $2 million.
Dad, then we're rich, really rich?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
Oh, isn't that nice? And I've been worrying about trifling little matters like small-town clothes.
Hey, this is going to make a big change in my plans.
Yes, a miracle's come our way at last.
$2 million. See, I'm going to start in right now insulting everybody I know.
Yes, sir. Let me tell you, I'm gonna get myself a big yacht and maybe a string of race horses.
I hope we'll all know how to act in our new position in
life. Well, now, I don't think I'd start counting our chickens before they're hatched. It might turn out we won't get the money.
Oh, that's just your natural conservatism, Dad. Look, let's make a deal. You know, 50-50. You do the worrying about getting the money, and I'll do the worrying about spending it. Andrew Hardy, millionaire playboy. Ah, that's me from now on.
Two days later, we find the Hardy family in the magnificent Detroit mansion, which is part of the Leeds estate.
But James, they tell me this house has 12 bathrooms. Why, that's simply ridiculous. We couldn't possibly use more than three. One bathroom for you and me, and one for Marion, and one for Andrew.
Well, if we actually inherit the estate, we can lock up the other nine bathrooms for company.
If we get the money. Well, holy smoke, I thought we had it already.
I've told you it's necessary for me to legally establish my line of descent from Colonel James Standish Leeds.
Father, do you know what I think? I think that lawyer, Mr. Brownell, is going to try and cheat us out of our money.
Now, look here, everybody. We agreed to consider this a dream until it comes true. Now, that's too much for you. You and Andy can go right back to Cobble at once. Is that understood?
Oh, all right.
All right. But honest, Pop, you ain't treating $2 million with a proper respect.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Hardy. I'm Dobbs, the butler, at your service. Mr. Brownell has given me my instructions.
Oh. Order dinner, please, and later I'll go over the whole house with you.
Thank you, Mrs. Hardy. Dinner will be served in 5 minutes in the small dining room, madam.
Thank you, Dobbs.
Thank you, Mrs. Hardy. Dinner will be served in 5 minutes in the small dining room, madam. Breakfast in the large dining room, madam. Midnight buffet supper in the colossal dining room, madam. Dad, I guess I was just born to be rich. Say, Dad, who's that guy coming in the front door? Gosh, maybe all this time we've been in the wrong house.
Good afternoon, and excuse me. I'm so accustomed to coming in with my own latchkey, I forgot this time.
Well, I'm afraid I don't know you.
But I'm afraid you do know me by hearsay. I'm Philip Westcott, Mr. Leeds' adopted son, at your service.
Oh, yes, Mr. Westcott.
Well, Philip, to you, Miss Marion. Mr. Brunell told me about you, but he was wrong. He said you were pretty. You're not pretty, you're beautiful. And this would be Mrs. Hardy, and Andrew, and Judge Hardy. Welcome to Detroit, all of you. And since I'm sort of a 42nd cousin, twice removed and only adopted, I wish you'd all call me Philip.
Why, Philip, you embarrass us. After all, you, and I mean, that is, if...
You mean, if it weren't for you, I might have inherited Mr. Leeds' estate.
Well, I did sort of anticipate your hiding in the bushes with a shotgun to pick me off.
Oh, nonsense. But I must run along and let you unpack. I merely dropped in to present my respects. The butler has my telephone number. Command me, all of you.
Oh, that's very sweet of you, Philip.
I'm going to ask you to show me all the grand shops in Detroit.
And you're going to have to take me through one of those big automobile factories.
At your service. And by the way, Judge, how are you descended from the original James Standish Leeds?
Through his older son, Andrew.
His older son, and his name was Andrew? Oh, yes, yes, of course, of course. Well, good day to you all for the time being.
Goodbye. And thanks, Philip.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. That's what I call a real man of the world. And unless I'm crazy, he knows a lot more than automobile factories.
Hello? Miss McNish's apartment, please. Hello, Consuela. Now, this is Phil. Listen, honey. I've discovered an important fact about Judge Hardy that may mean we get the $2 million after all. But it'll be necessary to make use of young Master Andrew Hardy. Now, that's where you come in. Now, I've let him coax me into introducing him to a chorus girl. So I'm going to bring him to the paradise tonight. Now listen carefully.
At 11 p.m., a figure sneaks down the stairway of the palatial Detroit mansion. It is Andy Hardy, who has, of course, kept secret from his parents that he has a date with Philip. Andy does not know that Judge Hardy is in the library wrestling with a bitter problem that involves the whole future of the Hardy family. Andy is almost to the front door when...
Who's that? Oh, is that you, Andy?
Yes, sir.
Well, are we going out somewhere?
Well, that's what it looks like, doesn't it?
And wearing your festive attire.
Well, if you mean my tuxedo and opera hat, that's what I got him for to wear, didn't I?
You're going out with Philip, I presume.
Why not?
I haven't discussed Philip with you, Andy, but you think he's the right sort of companion for you?
The right sort of companion? Why, gee, Daddy wears silk underwear Sundays and weekdays.
Oh, I see. But isn't it rather late to be starting out?
Well, maybe it'd be late in Carville, but it's different now.
What's the difference, Andy?
Well, look at what I was in Carville and what I am today.
Uh-huh. And what are you today?
Why, got a whole new viewpoint on life. Now, don't give me any more of that stuff about $2 million not making any difference to people. Maybe it don't make any difference to you. You're old. You've been used to being poor all your life. You couldn't change even if you wanted to. But me, I'm just starting out in life. You know, Dad, this money's all going to be mine someday, and, well, I got to learn to do the kind of things that a guy with $2 million has got a right to do.
Oh, I see.
Well, that's unless, of course, you should forbid me to go out now and meet Philip in my tuxedo and opera hat.
No, no, Andy. We don't forbid things in our family.
Okay. Well, put yourself in my place, and you'll realize that $2 million makes an awful difference in what a guy does. Good night, Pop.
So in the Paradise Cafe, young Andy Hardy catches his first glimpse of chorus girls.
Oh, boy. Look at those girls. Say, Phil, look at what they're wearing. How long has this been going on?
The show? Oh, about 3 months.
No. I mean the girls wearing, you know, what we're looking at now.
Hmm?
Phil, look at that chorus girl. She's like, oh, she's winking. She's winking at me.
She surely is. And you're a lucky man, Andy. That's Consuela McNish, the most popular chorus girl in town.
But why is she winking at me?
Now, don't be modest.
Oh, of course I won't say I'm poison ivy to the women. Boy, look at those girls. They're dancing right around the table. Say, what's this?
That looks to me suspiciously like a note.
Why should she put a note on our table?
She dropped it in front of you, Andy. Why don't you read it and find out?
All right. But it can't be for me, but I guess it is. Phil, it says, listen, will you have supper with me at my apartment after the show? And it's signed, Consuela McNish.
How do you do it, Andy?
You mean I'm going to have supper with a chorus girl in her own apartment? And after midnight?
Well, that's what it looks like to me.
Oh, but how did she know I was coming here? You suppose somebody told her?
No. She probably looked the place over and picked out the man that appealed to her most.
Well, I'll say she's an awful quick picker. Phil, I feel as if I'd said goodbye to childhood forever. Andrew Hardy, the chorus girl's plaything.
Well, folks, the big questions are, what happens when the adventurous young Andy Hardy gets to Consuela's apartment? Does Philip's plot against the family succeed? Do the Hardys get the $2 million? And when these questions are all answered, one tragic problem remains for Andy Hardy. How can he talk his father out of $175? Believe me, I'm terribly anxious to know the answers, as most of you are. So I can't wait until I see Judge Hardy's family in the Hardy's Ride High, with Lewis Stone, Mickey Rooney, Cecilia Parker, Faye Holden, Ann Rutherford, and Sarah Hayden. It will be at your favorite theater next week. I know you won't miss it. Once again, our lovely singing star, Melissa Corgis, who returns to sing Bizet's Tarantella. La la la. Here she is again, ladies and gentlemen, Baby Snook. Daddy and Snooks have just arrived home, and he's ready to give his child her first cooking lesson. Here they are.
All right, Snooks. Now, what do you want to cook?
Ice cream.
Oh, don't be silly. You can't make ice cream on a stove.
Why?
You don't cook ice cream, you freeze it. That's the difference between hot and cold.
What is?
Didn't you ever get burned?
Uh-huh.
Did you ever go out in a cold frost and your ears got very red? Weren't they cold?
No, they burnt.
Well, of course, when a thing is extremely cold, it produces a burn like that of heat, and heat is also used to freeze by burning in surgery, so that when you apply ice, it burns, and vice versa.
You feel all right, Daddy?
I feel fine, Snooks. Now, what would you like to cook?
Ice cream.
Now, don't start that again. You can't make ice cream on a stove.
Why?
Because you can't. Here, I've got Mummy's cookbook, and we'll pick out a nice, easy recipe that you can make.
What's your recipe?
A recipe tells you how to cook things.
Is there one for ice cream?
Of course.
Oh, so you can cook it.
No, you can't cook ice cream.
Why?
Oh, and some people even adopt them. Huh? Now, look. Here's a recipe on how to make fish cake.
How, Daddy?
Well, let me read it. Take one fish.
I get a goldfish, Daddy.
No, no. It must be an ordinary fish. You take out all the bones and chop it up.
Chop up the bones?
No, chop up the fish.
What fish?
Any fish.
A goldfish?
Any fish but a goldfish.
A whale?
No. People don't eat whales and they don't eat goldfish.
Does whales eat goldfish?
I don't know. Yes. Whales eat all little fish.
Sardines?
Yes.
How do they open the can?
I don't know. Let's start cooking some. Now, here's a piece of fish in the icebox. I'll get the stove plugged in, and you wash the fish.
Why?
To make it clean. What are you laughing at? What are you laughing at?
I don't know.
Come on, wash it and make it very clean while I get some flour.
All right, I'll make it very clean, Daddy. Fishy, fishy in the brook. Daddy, catch him on a hook. Mama, fry him in the pan.
Well, have you washed it, Snook?
Uh-huh.
All right, now we'll put it through the grinder like that. Yeah. We'll roll it in the flour like that. See, and you'll fry it on your little stove.
All right. Shall I put it in the pan?
Yes. Now, while the fish cake is frying, we can make some spaghetti.
What spaghetti?
Well, it's a food created by the Italians.
What's Italian?
Italians are people who speak Italian.
Could I talk Italian?
Why, of course not. It's not your language. You can't understand a word of it.
Well, how do the Italians understand it?
It's their language.
Do you speak Italian, Daddy?
Yes, I can speak Italian.
Well, why can't I speak it?
Because it's a different language.
What's the different language?
Italian! Italian is the language of the people who created spaghetti. Is that clear?
Uh-huh.
Now let's make some spaghetti.
What spaghetti?
Listen, Snooks. Spaghetti is long, stringy dough rolled into long, thin tubes that are dried out in the sun until they're crisp. And you know who invented the dish?
Huh?
Who invented spaghetti? What are you crying for?
I didn't do it.
Good heavens, the fish cake's nearly burned.
Oh.
Here, let me take it off the stove. Oh. Oh. Now, aren't you proud that you learned how to make a fish cake? Doesn't it look good?
No.
Why, I think it looks wonderful.
And why don't you eat it?
All right. Serve it to me on that little plate. And I'll be glad to eat it.
All right. Here it is.
Very well. There's room. Poof, good heavens. It tastes awful. Snooks, did you wash this fish?
Uh-huh. I made it very clean, Daddy.
What do you mean?
I washed it with soap.
Oh!
Now here's Warren Hull with a brief word to the fair sex.
Fair sex? Why, Bob, that's my province. Hull doesn't know how to talk to those sweet young things.
Now, just a minute, Frank.
I don't want...
Warren has something to say that's so logical you couldn't understand it, much less say it.
Well, look at it.
Go ahead, Warren.
Thank you, Bob. Ladies, do you want to know how to make sure you're getting the most flavor and goodness from the coffee you serve?
Then be sure you use the right brand of coffee for the way you make it at home. When you go to your grocer tomorrow, just run your eye along the shelves until you come to those familiar blue super vacuum cans which hold the new Maxwell House. Look carefully, and you'll see that some of these cans are marked drip grind and others marked regular grind. Now, there's a real reason why Maxwell House comes in these two different grinds. Perhaps you've already learned in your own kitchen that there's no such thing as one satisfactory all-purpose grind for making coffee. And it's because we know that's true that we've developed two different grinds. There's the regular grind Maxwell House, which is just right for percolator or boil methods. Or if you prefer drip coffee, the special drip grind will give you clear, sparkling, full-flavored coffee in any type of drip or glass coffee maker. Two coffee-making principles, so naturally, two different grinds. Just make sure you get the right grind for your way of making coffee. Then follow the accurate directions given on the Maxwell House can. Your very first steaming, fragrant cup will tell you this is just about the finest coffee you ever tasted. And by the way, don't forget to help your grocer celebrate the nationwide parade of progress of the American food industry. Stop in to see him tomorrow and order a pound of the new Maxwell House coffee. You'll see why Maxwell House is bringing pleasure to so many millions of Americans. Why more people are buying Maxwell House today than ever before in its history.
For his concert hall selection tonight, Meredith Wilson has chosen one of the most melodic of all the Sigmund Romberg compositions. A melody that Meredith considers should be looked upon as one of the great American classics. Lover, Come Back to Me, from the famous operetta, New Moon. Usually at this point, Meredith Wilson gives out with one of those family closing songs that he's created for this program. And tonight he was inspired by the presence of the great American family, the Hardys. And here they all are, Mickey Rooney, Lewis Stone, Fay Holden, Cecilia Parker, and Ann Rutherford, in the Good News version of Saying Goodnight. The song is entitled Romance Runs in the Family. Come on, Andy, what have you got to say for yourself?
I've got a weakness that's very strong. It's been my weakness right along. But you'd never guess it unless I confess it to you.
Well, I bet I can find out in a hurry. Oh, Polly, what's Andy's weakness?
He gets romantic when he's with me. But he blames it all on his family tree.
Sure. I'm just keeping an old tradition new. Believe me, romance runs in the family. So, Polly, what can I do? My ma's romantic, my pa's romantic, and I'm that way about you. Romance runs in the family. It always played a big part. For generations, we've been sensations in all affairs of the heart. Every one of our descendants, down to the centuries, gave away their independence for moments like these, and that's the reason romance runs in a family. So, Polly, what do you say? My folks would like it if we could strike it the same sweet way.
Well, I don't know. Oh, Marion.
Yes, Polly?
Does romance really run in your family? Because I think that romance is just dandy.
Well, I'm romantic. My beaux are romantic. And you can draw your own conclusions about Andy.
Hey, Mom, stick up for your family. Remember the Hardy's good name, please.
Now, Andy, excuse me, but you'll not confuse me. Your father can shoulder the blame.
Well, this seems jurisprudential. And with the highest regard for the truth, a little romance was rather essential for your other and me. So I must agree that romance does run in our family. And on our golden wedding day, we'll still be spooning and honeymooning in the same old way.
Well, Judge, my thanks from the Good News family. Now I think we can call it a day.
The time is right now to say goodnight now.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, but next week we're going to have one of the best shows we've ever presented. In addition to the regular gang, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Melissa Corgis, and Meredith Wilson, we will have as our guest of honor one of the greatest entertainers in the world, Eddie Cantor. Besides this, next week's program will have a most unusual novel feature. On the MGM lot, every star, executive, and producer will be present to do honor in celebrating the 61st birthday of an actor who is loved and admired by all of his associates and by millions of theater goers everywhere, Mr. Lionel Barrymore. We will intend to take our microphone under the stage, which will be transformed into a gorgeous banquet setting with all the glorious personalities of the MGM company in attendance. I am sure it will be a thrill that Lionel Barrymore won't forget, and likewise one that our Maxwell House listeners won't forget. So make a date with us right now and put the Good News program on your must list next Thursday. We'll be talking to you next Thursday night, so until then, go to the movies and take the family with you. And be sure to see Jeanette MacDonald in Broadway Serenade while it's at your favorite theater. This is Bob Young saying goodnight.
This is Warren Hull saying goodnight and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good for the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.